you can't essentially slay your way out of, you know, institutional racism. So we have to always very much careful in how we frame the kind of advice to women, especially Black women, in the book. But I would say that one thing that was interesting across all the interviews that we did with all the kind of really successful Black women was having a network of sponsors and cheerleaders and mentors that can help you in your career. And we underestimate the power of having cheerleaders, people that are on your side.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you are listening to The Fix. It's a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. So many of us are familiar with books out there like Lean In, which offer women strategies for how to advance at work. These books are really popular because a lot of young women are looking for guidance as they navigate their personal and professional lives. The challenge with a lot of these books is that they often treat all women the same. So on today's episode, you'll be hearing from Yumi Adegoke and Elizabeth Uvibeneni, co-authors of the book Slay in Your Lane, The Black Girl Bible. They'll be sharing how young Black women can overcome some of the challenges they face in work and life. Elizabeth was a new graduate when she started reading business books aimed at getting ahead. As she read more and more books aimed at helping young women to navigate their careers, she soon realized that none of these books were written for young Black women.
So alongside that, I was experiencing, I guess, various things in being in that very corporate, very male and very white, unwritten rules about how to get ahead in the workplace that I wasn't accustomed to being from a working class Black background. So I guess the exasperation I felt led me to call Yumi, my best friend, and ask her to write this book that would essentially speak to both of us and speak to many people as well. And the book is needed because a lot of the books that are written where it does talk about getting ahead, when they do talk about women, they don't necessarily include what it is to be a Black woman in a predominantly white space. So it was important for us to kind of be open and talk around the experiences that we do feel. So things such as microaggressions, stereotypes of how Black women should be and how this plays out and how this can be barriers in essentially thriving in places not set up for you to essentially excelling being a Black woman.
Here, Elizabeth shares a specific challenge she faced early on in her career as a woman of colour.
I read somewhere that the communication style of white women is preferred to than women of BAME background, so Black and ethnic minorities. So being able to kind of adapt in that environment, in taking meetings and practical things such as sending an email, being in a meeting and making sure that my tone, the way I said things, and if I disagreed with someone, it didn't necessarily put them off or make them see me as an angry Black woman. So the stereotypes that people, I guess, perceive around Black womanhood, being angry is definitely one of the big ones. So being in an environment where I was very aware about how people perceived me, I had to be very cautious in, I guess, sending emails, making sure I read them a couple of times. If I publicly disagreed with something in an email chain, just to make sure that there was no kind of like perceived tone. Communicating in meetings, being confident and being misread as being, you know, arrogant, making sure that when there is, you know, I am assertive, it's not read as it being angry. So I think the communication of Black women is something, and especially environments that you are a minority, is something that we are very aware of, and we're always, you know, adapting that to suit, I guess, majority white men, and then to a lesser extent white women. And obviously that's not easy, because I will never be a white man, or I'll never be a white woman. And I think because environments like that, to be successful, you embody the communication style of the people who are essentially successful.
Elizabeth says that women of colour are confronted with hypervisibility at work as they stand out as a minority. Her advice is to use this to your advantage and get comfortable with openly communicating and not apologizing for who you are. Yumi, Elizabeth's co-author, shares the same perspective when it comes to visibility at work. Here she shares what she perceived to be the barriers in her own career as a journalist.
I guess working in journalism, it's a 94% white industry, and it's an industry that's heavily sort of middle class. when me and Elizabeth went on to publish our book, when you're kind of so visibly different, and again, not necessarily from a background where your presence is expected or the default, it can become very easy to kind of diminish your right to be there. And that's not always on ourselves. That's not something that we're always doing ourselves. And I think that's kind of one of the issues with imposter syndrome, that it's always kind of defined as downplaying your own efforts, when a lot of the time that can happen because you're constantly being invalidated within the workplace. So I guess throughout my career, a lot of the time I sort of found myself in positions where I questioned my right to be somewhere, despite knowing very sort of vividly that I've had to definitely work 2 if not 3 times harder than everybody else to be there, given the fact that, you know, I wasn't privately educated, I don't have white privilege, I'm not a man, I'm definitely not someone that's expected to work in these kind of environments. But despite knowing how hard I've worked to get in a particular space, by virtue of things sort of like microaggressions, which sort of can make you feel as though, you know, you aren't supposed to be somewhere, or by virtue of feeling like you have to kind of explain yourself 2 to 3 times more than everybody else does, feeling that, you know, you haven't necessarily earned your space somewhere, and then sort of internalizing that because of the treatment that you face, or because of the fact that you're the only person somewhere. It's really quite difficult to shake. And I think that's definitely something that a lot of Black women face. And I think it's something that a lot of women generally face, but a lot of Black women particularly, especially if you're from a particular kind of background, because you always kind of feel like, if you know you're the only person in a space, why is that? You start to question your kind of legitimacy and whether you have a right to be there. And I think that's definitely something that's, I'd say, a barrier for a lot of Black women in the workplace.
It took Yomi and Elizabeth 3 years to collect stories that address the barriers that women of colour face at work. And Yomi says that while Slay in Your Lane was initially written for women like Elizabeth, the book has made an even bigger impact since it was released in July of 2018.
It's definitely sort of taken on a different shape as time's gone on, because I guess now, whilst our initial aim was to speak to our community and our demographic and women that look like us, it's spoken to so many different people. It's spoken to a lot of older women, Black women who consistently sort of say, I wish this was something that existed sort of 20 to 40 odd years ago, because they feel that there's never really necessarily been, at least in a book, something that has validated their lived experiences and something that's kind of shown, not themselves because they already know, but shown people outside of our community that there's statistical evidence that proves that, you know, these things that we worry about, these kind of glass ceilings, these kind of, you know, concrete ceilings in the case of Black women, aren't, you know, chips on shoulders, aren't imagined slights. These are real things. And then we've had a lot of sort of people buying it for younger women who are definitely sort of, you know, a lot younger than me and Elizabeth, during their sort of formative years, people that are sort of like 16, 17, 18, because they're kind of buying it for them to speak to them and to the experiences that they may have when, or are likely to have when they sort of grow up, when they go to university, when they sort of go into the workplace. And then outside of that, it's been, you know, really kind of interesting to see how it's spoken to people that aren't Black or female, people outside of the community who we didn't necessarily initially write it for, but who have taken a lot from it. A lot of sort of allies and people that want to learn about the Black British female experience specifically have sort of bought the book and sort of written into us and said that despite them sort of considering themselves liberal or progressive, there were a lot of things in the book that were complete news to them and that they'd never sort of had any kind of conversations about or even realized existed. And by virtue of being able to read about these experiences and having them sort of validated by lots of data, lots of anecdotes from me and Elizabeth's personal lives, but also illustrated with the stories of, you know, 39 trailblazing Black British women that we interviewed.
Yomi says that readers have treated their book as a comprehensive manual for empowering Black women in their lives. More importantly, it's also encouraged readers to really look inside themselves and see if they've been complicit in mistreating women of colour in the workplace.
I think we had one Amazon review, which was a white woman who said that she works in a team as a manager of a predominantly sort of Black female work group. And after being able to sort of read Slay in Your Lane, she's been able to come away from it and understand not only what she may be complicit in terms of stereotyping and microaggressions, but also how she can sort of empower her workforce to sort of do better and not, you know, sort of stagnate in the workplace. I think in terms of what we wanted to achieve was just for something to empower Black women and to sort of educate people that aren't necessarily Black women, and also for Black women to essentially educate themselves. And I think that's pretty much what we've done, and we're really sort of super proud of that.
The book explores a range of areas from education, work, money, and health, and how women of color can navigate them. Here, Elizabeth shares the key takeaways from Slaying Your Lane.
We always say that when it comes to issues of racism and sexism, we didn't want to put the onus on our readers because these are institutional things and structural things that they have to work within. So you can't essentially slay your way out of, institutional racism. So we have to always very much careful in how we frame the kind of advice to women, especially Black women in the book. But I would say that one thing that was interesting across all the interviews that we did with all the kind of really successful Black women was having a network of sponsors and cheerleaders and mentors that can help you in your career. And we underestimate the power of having cheerleaders, people that are on your side, people that you can go to when you have a bad day, essentially support systems. And they can be, you know, very formal, but they can be very informal as well. Mentorship is a very key thing, as well as sponsorship. And we talk about that in a book, because we have a lot of women who they want to succeed and they want to get ahead in their careers, but they're just lacking, I guess, having the right sponsor that can connect them to the right opportunity. So it's about developing relationships with people, authentic relationships, and essentially working on your personal brand in order to kind of like foster to get to a point where people are essentially allies in your career and your personal journey. It doesn't matter if you're very senior, it doesn't matter if you're starting out, having mentors and having sponsors are very, very key in career progression.
Yomi says the issue of how organizations can better support women of color is extremely complicated, and it's impossible to cite a one-size-fits-all solution.
I think when we look at what it is that sort of disenfranchised Black women in the workplace, it's so multi-layered and so kind of complex, and it's like these are issues that kind of affect Black women in every sort of societal realm and area of their lives. And I feel that there's so many initiatives that are going on right now on completely different sort of levels to kind of try and combat why it is Black women aren't, you know, necessarily progressing at the rate that they should be in the workplace, why they don't feel fulfilled in the workplace, you know, that they aren't perhaps being treated as well as they should be in the workplace. And I feel that it's kind of like asking, how do you solve racism, in my mind anyway, for lack of a better phrase. I feel like in terms of the answers as to how organizations can fix these things genuinely can't come from, you know, two 27-year-olds that are like still trying to navigate these issues themselves. I think it's so top down beyond even institutions like government. We don't even have the ethnic pay gap reporting yet. As of yet, I think it was only recently that it's something that's come up as something we'll do. We're still so far behind that I just think, yeah, just because the issues are just so many that it really would be like, how do we solve sexism in the workplace?
Each of us can take steps to empower and support women of color in our workplaces. Elizabeth says one of the most important things we can do is listen and have a good understanding of people's different experiences of work.
I think we could all do better for that, essentially. I think sometimes it's easy just to kind of have your own kind of opinion and say that's it. But being open to different people from different backgrounds is something that we don't do enough. And we say we do. We say we're open. But in actual reality, I don't think we are. So I think listening is one of the things that people can do. And I think once you listen, then you can, you know, empathize, and then you can champion, and then you can understand about how to help that particular person, or that if you're a manager, how can you empower them? Like, you're able to kind of understand the kind of nuances around their experiences and the experiences in that particular organization. So yeah, I think it starts from listening, and then you can essentially start to champion them as people and champion their work.
Finally, Yomi shares an important message for women of color who are facing similar challenges in their own lives.
So I think despite everything that we sort of say and everything that we advise, I think sometimes it's important that as Black women, we do understand that the problem doesn't lie with us. It lies with white supremacy. It lies with sexism. And that sometimes you may not feel necessarily up to kind of like fighting sexism, patriarchy and all those kind of things, you know, when you're just essentially trying to get paid. So I think, yeah, sometimes just being a bit softer on ourselves and a bit easier on ourselves and giving ourselves a bit less of a hard time, and just understanding that, you know, going to work for anybody's kind of difficult enough often. And, you know, whilst we have all these things that can empower us on like an individual level, we should definitely be a bit kinder to ourselves about how we sort of deal with these things.
Part of my goal with the podcast is to really share the diverse experiences of women and men at work. This week's fix is to really encourage all our listeners to educate themselves on difference at work. This might include reading a book or listening to a podcast that shares experiences of people who have backgrounds that are different from yours. We can all do a better job of understanding how people experience workplaces differently. And we really need this understanding if we want to start to build workplaces that work for everybody. On today's very God Boss Insights, we'll be tackling what women want from their employers. The Wharton Social Impact Initiative recently published a study on the top factors that impact women at work. Their research found the three most important factors for women evaluating their employers are 1, the number of women represented throughout the organization, 2, fair pay, and 3, health and job satisfaction. Women want to see equal representation at every level of their workplaces. It's not enough just to have an equal number of women and men in terms of total headcount. Companies need to ensure that women are represented at every level of the organization. The researchers also suggest that companies need to be more proactive in terms of regularly evaluating themselves when it comes to pay equality and employee satisfaction. By being intentional about these three factors, companies will be able to retain women and ensure they remain engaged. Thanks again for listening to today's episode and for continuing to support our show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our newsletter, and you can find the link for this on our show notes or on our website, michellepking.com/thefix. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll catch you all again next week.